First of all, Enduduzo, I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about last week's performances at DZ's, which were a celebration of the first really democratic election post-apartheid in South Africa on April 27, 1994, right?
Yeah, so thank you. Thank you so much again for having me. I think there's various types of feelings that could be associated with post-apartheid South Africa and democracy as a whole, notions of reconciliation. And of course, there's a sense in which music wins always, you know. So on the one hand, one has seen in recent times the problems of post-apartheid in South Africa and the kind of cracks that are exposed, especially during a pandemic, when you started to see that the system doesn't entirely protect the people. On the one hand, we understand that the music has always been a kind of a way of interpreting what was going on, but also a way of challenging what was going on. But also it has been a space for us to dream about the kind of potentiality in the future that we foresee. And for me, given the kind of recent kind of expositions of these cracks in the system, I was playing the music as a way towards the kind of dream world that we think South Africa should be, and the kind of freedoms that people have been seeking. And music then, in that case, became the space where we can celebrate. So there's a sense in which the sonic becomes a space for celebration, but outside of the sonic, there's still various tensions about how we celebrate. So it was very symbolic that at that moment, we had an opportunity to play sounds that have been able to allow people to experience the potential for freedom.
When you associate specific sounds with freedom, which sounds do you have in mind? I really loved your singing on Saturday.
Thank you.
And maybe that this is part of what you associate with freedom.
Yeah. There's a sense in which jazz historically, even through the transatlantic slave trade, was this glimpse of memory, was this thing that was seeking freedom. So the music comes as a space or a place that, while everything else that people wanted was not possible because of segregation and as a result, the civil rights movement in the United States. But if you think about South Africa, the Sharpeville massacres, the Soweto uprisings, and all of these things, there's a sense in which the sound of freedom are the sounds that break out of these difficulties. So the sounding out of freedom basically means the break from everything else and allowing this moment of surrender into the sound. And singing is a beautiful way of thinking about this. Like, if human beings were to be allowed to sing out all the things that they wish to see in the world, or the kind of world that they would like to see. So there's a sense in which you could use singing as a metaphor for the manifestations of things that are hopeful. And that's really where this idea of freedom really exists.
This reminds me of Yuma Sekela and his
Yeah.
specific sounds. And when he talks about mines in South Africa, what you're describing just reminds me very much of Yuma Sekela's work.
Oh, yes, his work is very important. On the one hand, it locates the sound, the histories of the sound, but he constantly invoked this idea of the chain to the mines, right? So there again, we see this notion of displacement and the chain as a metaphor that carries all of these utopian ideas, but that can kind of leave behind. So while you are here working in the mines, all the way underground, there's a sense in which you see yourself back home someday. And for some of these people, as Masekela narrates, some of these people never went back, but some of them did. So there's a sense in which displacement and seeking place has always been a kind of backdrop, particularly for South African jazz. So it's great that you should mention Masekela. He was a pioneer in terms of like storytelling as a method for presenting jazz performances. And this is what I'm trying to do, but I'm of course, I'm learning. I'm younger than, you know, he was. He had a lot of experience that, you know.
Sorry, there is an ambulance.
That's New York for sure.
It's New York. On Saturday, you also talked actually about that concept of exile, and you were talking about both the South African diaspora and what musicians, South African musicians, did outside South Africa, but you were also talking about people in exile in South Africa itself.
Yep. So that's a very interesting discourse that has been kind of pointed to by various scholars. One that I can think of now is Salim Washington, who is a professor at the UKZN University here, but is of American origin. So he talks about jazz that happened in South Africa and during the difficult times of apartheid, and he talks about the relationship between that kind of jazz articulation and the jazz articulations that were happening outside. So there's a sense in which both of these articulations rejoice in the sound making. So if you think, for instance, about people like Mambusi Mhlongo, who was in exile but also was in South Africa at different moments. Similarly, Abdullah Ibrahim. So there's a sense in which those people were displaced internally due to the forced removals, which was a system, an apartheid system, that was pushing Black people away from the cities, away from the functioning of environment, and they were pushed to dysfunctionality, and where they were pushed into squatter camps or like the ghetto, as it were. So there is that kind of displacement, which is, while you are in the country, you are exiled from particular practices, you are exiled from performing this music on the bandstand. And there is another modality, which was the people that were outside, and outside meaning outside culturally, linguistically. They were not speaking their mother tongues, they were elsewhere, living in different environments. And they were also like projecting the energy of home. So there is a sense in which this has been a fundamental kind of way of theorizing these sounds, the notion of exile and exile, place and displace. So these are the two things that are always there. Mselegu invokes them. He put out a last album called Home at Last. And of course, it was like a question mark, because he came home after exile, but home was not home enough, because he was not appreciated, his work was not acknowledged, he wasn't getting work, and he went back. So he started thinking, what is home? Is home a geographic location or a spiritual construct? Or is it a place where people appreciate you? So there is a beautiful kind of way of reflecting to these problems of place and displace that is an integral part of the enunciations of these sounds.
So, you were just talking about Beki Seleku, right?
Yeah.
Beki Seleku. Can you tell us just a little bit more about this particular artist?
Okay, well, Beki Seleku came from Lamontville, a township in Durban. And, his father went to Cambridge, actually. So the family in those days was seen as to be like kind of privileged. And he came from a musical family. All his siblings were singers and pianists. And he took jazz as a genre, but with a very specific focus on spirituality that informed his world. And again, if we look at the different histories, there is a moment where people really were fighting physical brutalization in South Africa. And there is a movement in the 70s that was fighting through literature and thought, like the Black Consciousness Movement that was led by Steve Biko. Mselegu comes in the 80s to exile, 80s, 90s. And those guys, including Eugene Skiff, were using kind of spirituality as a way to provide healing. And I think by extension, I come from that kind of lineage, which is to look at spirituality and more of an inner way, as a way of resolving these problems, when you realize that your physical is limited, even your intellectual can be limited, but spirituality as a way of producing freedoms all the time. So that's Beki Mselegu, and he put out a number of records, including Timelessness, that he recorded in the US with Joe Henderson, Pharoah Sanders, A.B. Lincoln, Elvin Jones. And he was a true master. And for me, someone that really taught me a lot of things about music and spirituality and how do we function within that binary of sounds and spirit ideas.
I think that's why you love John Coltrane.
Definitely, yeah. So Mselegu was connected to John Coltrane, and because John Coltrane, of course, had an epiphany in when he recorded A Love Supreme, I think it was 64. Actually, I was so lucky. Some days ago, I managed to go and record something in front of you, which is a studio where John Coltrane recorded A Love Supreme, and the very same piano that Mekwe Tina played on. So, of course, there's a connection between my love for this music and John Coltrane. It's about how this music does not lead to music, but leads to a spiritual freedom, leads to a world that is almost cannot be touched by humans, but humans can experience. Because it seems as though human beings, every time they touch something, it just gets destroyed. And the spirit essence is the one thing that holds. And this is quite central in my new work as well. In the spirit of Hindu is about the revitalization of this vital force that resides within all living beings.
And also on Saturday, you played a suite.
Yeah.
That sounded very spiritual. Can you tell me a little bit about that composition?
Thank you. So that suite is really some of the works that I've been exploring functioning within the number three or three movements. You know, it emerges out of a deep understanding of cosmology as being the living dead, and the ones to be born. So this kind of triad informs an ontological idea or even a cosmological idea and how the Bantu people conceive the very notion of being in the world. So I use three movements always in my work. So the first one I started with was Itemba. And Itemba is really a movement that speaks about hope, but hope not as an abstract idea, hope as an action. And then it moved to Emlilweni, which speaks about the symbol of fire in the origin stories of the Bantu people that associate fire as an energy of our ancestors that went into the underworlds, but also connect with the recurring fires in South Africa that are a symbol and an expression of people's yearning for freedom. Then I close with a movement called Umlayezo Phuthumayo, which really is a production or a vocalization of the spirit world. What are the messages that our ancestors are giving to us in real time that could help to create a world that is more kind, a world that is more loving? So that's, in short, that's the three-part suite that I presented.
And what's the title of the suite again?
Well, the title of the suite, I would call it Invocation, but it changes with every gig. But for that gig, I was particularly looking at, the title of the suite changes, but the contents inside the suite shift every time. So I believe in what I call prophetic word, which means things happening spontaneously, and improvisation is a prophetic word that if you are open enough, there is something that can be channeled through you. So.
So the title changes every performance.
Yes. Depending on what is this prophetic word that can come right now.
That's amazing. I can't wait to find out about the new title.
The new title. There you go.
I love it.
That's it. Everyone is excited to see, even when I'm posting, they like, is it not that other song? I'm like, yeah, but it's changed now. You know, so there's a thing about like sounds and this constant evolution of sounds that is by extension a way that nature behaves, constantly changing. And there's a way in which our production of sound is not separate from a way of being in the world that is much broader, that is constantly evolving. And that's really what I look at, about how sounds are a way or an extension of being in the world.
You're talking about your new work, which is also very spiritual. Tell me a little bit about what you're working on now.
Well, I'm releasing an album on Blue Note, which is my second album now on Blue Note. It's called In the Spirit of Ndu, and it's my 10th album, actually. And I was thinking about what are some of the ways in which one could put a grand narrative or a summarized narrative as that invokes all the things that I've touched on in previous years. And I started thinking, well, quite central in my work has been the notion of ritual, but the ritual as a way of making sense or keeping intact the cosmological idea. So the Ndu idea originated from the Mandu people, which is the greater population of the African people. And thinking about all of the catastrophes that have taken place over many years, and what are the things that have refuse the catastrophes? What are the things that have refused the erasure? And I came with this idea of Ndu as a way of invoking the essence of being. Essence of being as a human being that is loving, that is kind, that is, so all of these things are naturally inside every human being. But something has happened to human beings that have created a kind of out of tuneness. So what does it mean to bring an in-tuneness via the sound? So I use a lot of the themes to bring this essence that in essence, all human beings are beautiful. And this is the thing that we are moving towards, a reminder, a thing that invokes memory of beauty, memory of love in the world once more.
So this is your second album with the Blue Note label.
Yes, it is.
What does it feel like to work with such an important label in the jazz world as a South African musician?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a very important question. Part of what there's an email that I received from the president of Blue Note when they signed my first album. And this email, I'm going to paraphrase, but one of the things that he was saying was like, when he hears this sound, he feels like this is what the Blue Note record label has represented over many years. And I think that's quite a big compliment in a sense that if you think about who has recorded the lineage over many years, these are the same people that I really have been following their footsteps. So at that level, this is an important moment for me. But quite central in that, I thought, what would it mean for my being signed to Blue Note to be a way to bring out an awareness about a greater community of musicians here in South Africa? But not only the current musicians, but mainly the artists that were before me, that my teachers and people that have inspired me. And of course, it has led to this moment. Now we have a Blue Note Africa imprint, which is the most exciting idea, which means anyone in the continent has an opportunity now to get signed to Blue Note. This is very important, and it's going to give a lot of publicity to people that really deserve it. And so even when I was recording, I was deliberate about bringing young musicians such as Dylan Tabisha, who was playing vibraphones, Linda Skakane on tenor, Robin Fassi, who played the trumpet, Khonze Makgene, who played percussion, Dane Paris, who played the drums, and Steven D'Souza, who played the bass, to kind of like bring all of those, that young energy to the fore as well. And of course, the album is also accompanied by very important guests. There is Jalil Shaw, who's an alto player, who features an American alto player. And there is Anna Vidawa, who's a singer from Switzerland. And of course, one of my favorite collaborators, Omar Gugu, is on the album. So the album is kind of like, what is it that is happening in South Africa? Can we represent that in one album? So it was, for me, it was important that I work with the people that I worked with as a kind of picture, one manifestation of very important people or an energy vortex that is currently taking place here.
And in this context, can you also change the title of the album after it's released, or this doesn't work here?
Well, so the changing of the title is a thing that happens inside. So basically, the themes in a suite is three themes, right? But packaged together, they tell a different story. So there is a sense in which I can start borrowing songs from different albums, mixed with this, and it produces a different kind of title. So the changing of title is the change of frequency, the change of energy, you know. So one day I will bring in all of this music with a different title, you know. So it's just about the energy and how respectful we can be about the moment, that this moment is different to any other moment that we've experienced. It's also something that is deeply anchored in our concepts of time in Africa, you know, which is the past is experienced now, the future is experienced now in the present. So there is like a way in which all of these manifestations are just the collapse of time concepts as we know them.
You know, and Duduzo, what you just told me makes me think that your album now and your signing with Blue Note gives permission to other African artists, not just South, as yes. you mentioned, not just South African artists, but other African artists from
African
the continent, to aspire to big goals and to aspire to yeah. perhaps dreams that maybe they never gave themselves permission for before.
Of course, of course. It's that, and plus, I think it's more about the world getting a chance to experience this beauty. You know what I mean? Because I think it's just not the African continent that is gaining here, but the world would get a lot of healing from this music. So there's a sense in which the world can also celebrate this move, because a lot of the music here is really aligned to healing practices and properties. So signing more artists from the continent means more healing is spread around the world.
That's
yeah.
great.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Also, I'm fascinated by this concept of being a musician who understands music from two entirely different continents.
Yeah.
You perform American music, you perform African music, you're an African musician, but you play African-American music. How does that work for you when you perform or when you write music? Do you, yeah. how do you mix this amazing world, these amazing musical worlds together? Yeah.
Well, I think the beauty of it is history. So history tells us that like jazz, African-American jazz came as a result of the slave trade. So in essence, these people originated from Africa, and they crossed the Atlantic, and whatever that they could remember in utter brutality, whatever glimpses of home they could remember, it made its way into jazz music. So in other words, I believe that this is all African music. It's African music that has traveled across the Atlantic and had encounters with other musics and came back and echoed into the continent. So for me, I believe jazz is much younger than the jazziness that is found in African indigenous music. So there's always been a jazziness, improvisation, syncopation, swing. All of these things are many, many thousands of years before the slave trade. So I think the jazziness is where I draw from, and jazz is a product of the jazziness in Africa. So is many other musics.
You said jazz is a product of what exactly? I'm sorry.
The jazziness. The jazziness meaning improvisation was there before jazz. Mm-hmm. Swing was there before jazz. Syncopation was there before jazz. Mm-hmm. All of these things were there before jazz. So jazz became one manifestation of the jazziness that was happening in the continent many years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense in which for me, it's not two stories, it's one story that has given birth to many kinds of stories.
I see. So in other words, African musicians in a way are the fathers or the grandfathers of African American jazz.
The mothers. They gave birth, yeah.
The mothers. And then jazz musicians here in the States are the children. Are your children?
So they are the children of Africa, mm-hmm. of course. They're Randy Weston puts it beautifully. He says everything came from Africa. And if we look at the history of the ancient Kemet, the history of Egypt, we can see the traces of everything that happened in the world, civilization, music, aesthetic, all of these things emerge from Egypt. And of course, connected to Ethiopia. So there is a sense in which everything, Randy Weston puts it amazingly beautiful. He says everything came from Africa. And he was one of the people that inspired me, an African-American piano player who, had a home in Africa, in West Africa, and it had really strong ties with the continent, mm-hmm. like John Coltrane, like Art Blakey, all of these people were seeking the roots.
Yeah, and I really like the sound also of Abdullah Ibrahim, because it's such a unique African and African-American sound at the same time.
Yep. Yep.
Just like the sound.
Yeah, Ibrahim produces a manifestation that is linked to folk sounds in Africa. So, it will always provide a different variation. Because we have many languages here, we have many cultures, our landscapes are beautiful. So, we're always inspired to think in a different way. You move from one geography, you hear a different sound because people talk a different language. You move to another place, they eat different food. So the varieties of cultures, languages, landscapes, they provide variations of different sensibilities throughout the continent. So this is one of the gifts in Africa, is variation.
But at the same time, when people go to a jazz club anywhere in the world, whether it's here in the city, in New York City, or if it's in Japan, I don't think people's first thought is African music.
Yeah.
Even
when they go,
it's so tied to African music. I don't think people necessarily associate jazz with African music.
Well, I think society likes to operate outside of historical happenings. And that's a very shallow thing to do. But everyone that is, kind of aware of historical narratives would always think about jazz as a product of an African experience in America, right? It's an African experience, how Africans were trying to create and retain their identities through a brutal system that was seeking to erase their consciousness. So it's a work of memory. We cannot listen to jazz without understanding a historical underpinning of what that is.
Mm-hmm. And also, Nduduzo, I know you're a PhD candidate.
Mm-hmm.
What is your current research on?
Well, my current research is really based on the connection between ritual and improvisation, and looking at the functionality or the place of sound in spirituality. So many seminal textbooks in South Africa speak about or put a serious emphasis on sounds and sociopolitical context. There is not enough text in South Africa that speaks about the connections between a cosmological leaning and how that results to sound. So the research that I'm doing is looking at improvisation as a response or as a way of being in the world. What does it mean to produce sounds that in many ways are putting a world together, a worldview together, and keeping that intact? So my research is not away from the things I've been talking about in this interview. It's kind of like world making, creating a world, bringing creative creation stories, and giving them a place within the way I approach my sound, within the way I approach my improvisation. So this is my last year, and I'm really tired of being in an institution now. So I want to take a break after this and travel a bit more. But it's been exciting. Hopefully I submit in August, and this should be my last year.
Congratulations, that's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I post it as well. I post a lot on my socials and people can follow. Not only do I post music, but I post these kind of reflections and educational, materials. So I'm excited. I think not even the sky is the limit.
One of my other questions to you, Ndudiso, was you did talk a little bit about the South African diaspora last weekend. And I wanted to ask you, how do you connect as well with South African musicians outside who are outside South Africa?
So the connection between musicians in Africa and musicians in the diaspora has always been there. It's through collaboration, and this is why I make an effort to kind of like keep those connections intact. This comes as a lineage from what Brahima Sekela, Mamire Makeba, and all of our teachers were doing. And I think in keeping in line with those heritages and cultures, we have to be very deliberate about how we connect with the diasporas, I guess the idea of Pan-Africanism was really based on that. Like, how do we always kind of project to the same kind of originality or the point of origin?
One more thing I want to ask you. I know Michael, John Coltrane, Abdullah Ibrahim are some of your, main influences musically and artistically. But is there someone else that you really are inspired by, who may not have to be a musician, someone that really inspires you when you perform, when you compose, when you write music, when you travel, when you dream of
Definitely.
ideas? Is there
Oh
someone
man.
or something?
So I think there's many people to kind of think about here. Firstly, it's my village where I come from. I'm constantly thinking about those people and what they gave to me. But I'm also cognizant of the environment that I came from. It produced a lot of music, just the environment by itself. And then, of course, that directly leads to my mother and father, who were both musicians, and I'm blessed to have had them. I always my mother passed away, my father passed away, and it's only my mother that's left. But I'm constantly thinking about the teachings. And of course, I've been blessed to get married to another musician. And that's really the person that inspires everything I do here. I play a note, it's like, that's not gonna work. I'm like, okay, let's change that. It's beautiful. And my children, of course, So I've got a lot of inspiration that comes outside of the music community, but that is just my family. My family is both musical and very supportive. So I'm always inspired by being part of such a loving family, a kind family, a giving family, that gives back to music.
And then after this new trip to New York City, this upcoming trip, what are your plans for next year or in 2 years? What are some of your other dreams, other projects?
I don't do very well with plans, beyond. There's a sense in which I'm so absorbed in every moment, and I try sometimes to think, what would I do in 2 years? But I never really have an answer. But I'll tell you another thing that is interesting that has happened. When COVID-19 hit, I started to dream even smaller, because you didn't know, the world became unpredictable, and I started dreaming in 50 minutes. In 15 minutes, I want to do that. In 1 hour, I want to do that. So that's how my whole notion of time has changed. I'm dreaming in 2 hours. I'm dreaming the things that I really can achieve. I'm like I was dreaming to come to this meeting with you, and that's like my dreams have gotten very short. So I don't have any idea about next year. I'm excited about next month in you in the US.
And also, and to do one more thing, I was just thinking about Don Cherry and how he was so influenced by African music as well, and so many of his performances somehow used African ideas, musical ideas.
Of course.
Yeah,
of
so
course.
I think it's just another example of these American artists who go back to the source.
Yes, so many of these artists went back to the source. Don Cherry is one really good example. But like I said, Randy Weston, Art Blakey, A.B. Lincoln, Elvin Jones, everyone went to Africa. Everyone, it's just like, it's, and again, it's not a surprise, it's a historical thing that in seeking your own identities in the sound, you'll also be thinking about your genealogy and it will take you back to the continent. So the explicitness, especially in the 60s, was because like everything was like becoming unclear and people needed to know who they were. And a lot of them, including John Coltrane, transitioned also and started adapting conversion names. They started looking for other religious belief systems. They thought about the continent. So I think that movement is coming full circle now, where again, people are seeking things in Africa. And Africa is seeking things from the diaspora as well. Because sometimes the diaspora holds some of the most ancient memories of Africa, you know.
Right.
So there's a sense in which it's a dialogue. It's a dialogue. It's a dialogue.
I see. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Andiduzo. I think
I appreciate
now,
it.
I'm okay.
Yeah, this is a lot. This is a lot.
And I just wanted to add one more thing. During your performance last Saturday, I did feel that I was both in the world of John Coltrane and in Africa at the same time. This is exactly how I felt. It was magical because of that.
Yeah. I think, again, it takes us back to history. It's the world of John Coltrane was in the continent, especially towards the last albums that he recorded. He was very deliberate about. There's an album called Kulise Mama. He invited African singers, the drummers, and everyone. But also in his sound, later on, John Coltrane started playing like two dialogues. In my own reading of it is that like the lows were kind of like one place and the highs were like the kind of, what is it? The utopian place, the home that he never got to come to. So there is a sense in which even sonically, Coltrane was invoking these worlds. He was invoking a duality, being elsewhere and thinking about another place. So that's what my music is invoking as well. It's about this duality and collapsing into one form of essence, which I call Ndu. So Coltrane was seeking Ndu as well in many ways.
Well, thank you so much, Andiduzo. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I appreciate your time and having all those difficult questions. But it was great. Thank you.